Good evening, this is Mojo Radio, Hoodoo Radio, Ghost Radio.
Cancel my subscription to the resurrection.
I am not a number, I am a free man.
Send my credentials to the house of detention.
And now Ghost Radio presents House of Detention. With your host, Alan Graham.
Well, welcome to the show. This is our second show. Let's have a word from our sponsor right now, because without them, we wouldn't be here. It's the PMD.
This portion of Alan Graham's House of Detention is brought to you by the Portable Medical Disc, the PMD.
Now, I told you last week how important it was to me to make sure that every doctor I see knows what the other doctor's doing to me, because serious mishaps happen all the time. So this device takes care of that. It gets all of your medical history and all the medications you're taking on one chip, one little disc. When you go to see the first doctor and he tells you, what are you taking? Are you still taking this? And he's going like this through his notes. Never again will that happen. If you give him this little disc, he'll put it in his computer and your whole medical history coming, including your other doctor, what he's doing to you. So everyone's on the same page. Now, I'm recommending this because I think it's the most important thing in your life, your health, and most people think that too, but do something about it. Don't let yourself be a victim. Overmedication is a national epidemic, and it's something that can be... Put yourself in the hands of good people and not amateurs. Let's put it that way. Okay, now we're moving on. And while we're on the medical report, I want to do a shout-out to a few people who are not doing too well. My brother-in-law, Bob Kofi in Liverpool. My niece, Sharon, in Liverpool. And my good friend Lauren Worth and Mary, his wife, my neighbors. And to a very good friend of mine who's doing well, not bad at all, but he saved my life once. And it went like this. After your heart attack, you know, everything goes wrong, like an old car. My teeth started falling out. So I went to a doctor. He's a Vietnamese doctor. His name is Ao, if you can believe that. A dentist, I mean, Dr. Ao. So I went in and he said, okay, yeah, you got two bad teeth. I'll pull them all out. I said, pull them all out? He said, yeah, waste of time. I'll give you a new teeth. Go over there. And I went to this place to look at the new teeth. Oh, they were big, ugly. And oh, my God. And I said, let me think about this. He said, no, you pull them all out. It's all done. It's easy. And I charge insurance company a big fee, and it's all done easy for me. And I said, oh, sorry. I said, by the way, has anyone ever joke about your name, Dr. Ao? And he goes, yeah, all the time. Ha, ha, ha. Okay, so I go to this other dentist. His name is Hugo Preti, and his wife, Raquel. I call her Angel de Dientes. She's the angel of my teeth. And these people, they told me, don't ever take all your teeth out. It'll take 10 years off your life. So the point here is, don't listen to one guy. Go get somebody else's opinion before you take this radical, drastic step, and your life is in danger. Okay. Let's moving on here. I think right now let's just go to Grip It, because that's a very interesting subject today. Grip It good. When a problem comes along, you must grip it. Oh, that's another song.
Grip It. G-R-I-P-I-T. The Ghost Radio International Paranormal Investigation Team. Grip It. Grip It.
Okay. Now, I've been telling you a story about this guy up in Oregon who claims to be Jim Morrison. It gets funnier and funnier because, you know, the phony Cliff White, who pretends to be Jim Morrison's son, he calls up this cowboy Jim, who pretends to be Jim Morrison, And he says, can I speak to my dad, please? So there's this like reunion of lunatics on the phone. So I call up and I say, I'm Alan Graham, Jim's brother-in-law. Can I speak to my brother-in-law? And his wife, Dr. Marcia, says, Jim, you want to speak to Alan Graham? And he goes, who's Alan Graham? This is a guy from laying on the floor in the kitchen, I think. So she said, who are you? And I said, well, I'm his brother-in-law, Jim Morrison's brother-in-law. And he said, it's Jim Morrison's, it's your brother-in-law. Do you want to say hi? And he went, hi, how you doing? I said, fine. So we had this protracted conversation, shall we say, via his wife, Marcia. And it's like, it didn't talk like Jim at all, but this guy is convinced he's Jim, and his wife, I said to her, well, do you think he's Jim? And she said, well, that's what's been told to me. I said, well, what do you do now? And she said, we sell horses. So last week we had two lunatics on. Are they in the studio again? Ratchet and Bamba? They claim to be the manager for this cowboy Jim. But there's another guy up in Oregon, I forget his name, but he says he's the manager, and he's got this website, but he's selling this video of Jim. So I'm really confused. So, I'm looking for an expert on this. So if you're an expert on this whole thing, please call 818-602-4498. And I'm going to try to get an expert on the line, because there's got to be somebody who can figure out who is who, who's the manager, who's not, And this fellow, well, he claims to be the manager of Cowboy Jim, but...
Hello,
John. How are you?
Good.
Are you the manager of Cowboy Jim in Oregon?
I help. Used to help out with it, but haven't been working with Rodeos West.
Why is that?
Pardon me?
Well, we're looking for an expert that can help us figure out who's who. Now, there's two people claim that they are the manager of this Cowboy Jim, and then this other fellow, we don't know his name, some other guy who has that site you just mentioned, he says he's the manager. So can you tell us who's the real manager?
I don't think there is one.
Ah. So, Gerald...
Why am I so much echo on this phone?
Don't know, sorry. Now, listen.
You hear?
We know that by, do you know what an IP address is?
An IP what?
An IP address. When you go online and you post something, for example, you go on Wikipedia or you go on Craigslist or you send an email out saying Alan Graham killed everybody. Do you know that we can trace that email back? And we traced it to you, John Separich. And we know you wrote it. So can you tell us something about Alan Graham killing everybody in the movie Bullet and Star Trek and the cast from... Wiz, didn't you say he killed everybody in that email you wrote?
I don't recall that.
Well, you said you know the one I'm talking about, don't you? Do you know who you're talking to, don't you, Johnny?
Is this Alan?
This is Alan Graham, your old friend.
Oh, Mr. Graham, how are you doing?
Are you still in the water business, Big John?
I know. And I'm moving on.
I saw your resume on the website there. You're looking for work, are you? What do you do in water?
I try to help filtration plants drinking water plants.
Well, listen.
So I try to go in there and look for ways to make them more efficient, make them more accurate.
When I was a young man, I worked on a sedimentation ranch where, you put all the water, the sewage through sedimentation and bacteria. So we're kind of kindred spirits in that department, aren't we? Anyway, moving along, why did you write that nasty letter? Did you think that I wouldn't find out that it was you?
Alan, I don't think I've written anything.
Well, we got your email, the one you posted, and we traced it right back to you. And then I checked my email in my database, and it comes right up to you, your email. So we know that you had something to do with it. Maybe you didn't write it, but you know what I'm talking about, don't you? You read it.
Oh, right? I know I wrote some, not the nicest things. But I didn't say you killed anybody.
No, I was just making that up.
Because you rip on Cliff, and then I just say, oh, well, don't, you got to take everything Alan says with a gram of salt.
That kind of stuff. Well, I thought, that you were big pals with Gerald, what's his name? that guy?
I was pals with Gerald, and we had a falling out.
Yeah.
And, yeah, this had to do with me finding out more about Oregon Jim.
Yeah, he's not the real one, is he?
I absolutely think he is.
You do? So you mean Gerald Pitts is the one who's making it up, or? What did you find out that turned you against Gerald Pitts, I mean?
Well, I actually, and this is between us, okay?
Yeah, sure.
I value our friendship a lot.
Yeah,
even though I think we have very different styles in how we do things.
You betcha.
It's such an honor to me to talk to you.
Well, thank you, John. Well, tell me what
it's awesome because, I read so much about you in books, and I know that you care a lot about Jim.
Yeah, I do. Well, tell me this. What's the bit of gossip on Gerald you're going to tell me?
Well, what actually happened was I called up there. I talked a little bit to Marcia, Jim's wife.
Yeah, I did too.
I told Gerald, I have to call you because I appreciate you're the one who got me into this. Hey, I actually got to talk to Jim Morrison's wife. Thank you. Please don't tell anybody. The next day, I get 3 or 4 calls. People saying, wow, yeah, you talked to Jim's wife? Wow. I called Gerald back. I said, Gerald, I asked you not to tell anybody. He said, come on, John. I did that in your honor, for your honor. And yeah. I'm just lost. I'm lost. Yeah. I don't understand people from Oregon.
Well, you know what? I'm going to have you as a regular guest on my radio show, Big John, and because you make a good conversationalist. Now, stop writing nasty stuff about me. Write all the groovy stuff, because I'm selling a book, and we want groovy stuff. Actually, we want naughty stuff, too, but it's been very interesting talking to you, and thank you for the compliment, and I'll be talking to you again.
It's always a blessing. It's really funny. About 2 months ago, I ran into a fella, and he was English, and he was a dealer in expensive art. And this guy, all of a sudden, he called me on Thursday night, and he started talking with the English accent, and then he's like, you know who this is? And I go, Alan Graham? And he goes, no, this was that. And I go, oops, and then I know there's this guy named Paul.
Well, you have Alan Graham?
Paul.
You must have Alan Graham. Do you have Alan Graham on the mind all the time?
No, but the more he was talking, I didn't think it was that Paul guy. I thought it might be you.
Oh.
A similar voice, really. I still think you two have a similar voice.
You mean something like this? Do you do body piercing, that kind of voice?
Then it was you.
Yes, of course it was. I'm an actor. What do you think?
I thought it was this guy, Paul, who's a...
I've got some good acting up, then. I have some good skills going, don't I?
No, I know you're brilliant. You've already got me down, but I will impress you in time. I'll think of stuff, and you will be floored with what
I'm looking forward to that because... I believe you can. All right, Big John, it's been great talking to you, and I'll talk to you again.
Okay, God bless, Alan.
Rock on, man. Now, that was cool. All right. Now, our friend Gary Patterson, he's been standing by. Gary Patterson is a great man. He's the author of the Beatles' book, I Am the Walrus, into its 8th printing, a total pro. And let me just say this about Gary. He has a unique way of taking something from nothing and making it into something really big. He's the one who did his own, work. He didn't get an agent first. He went out and he made himself successful before he got an agent. So he could actually help anyone, any aspiring writer or anyone like that who's trying to get into the publishing industry, which is a world of sharks. Anyway, you're lucky. A lot of people get taken. Let's put it this way. Gary Patterson has a real cool plan and he's helped me a great deal. So, all right, we're going to get Gary on the line right now. I guess he's in Tennessee. We're going to talk about him going on Coast to Coast Radio with Ray Manzarek.
Hello.
Is this the famous Gary Patterson?
Is this the famous Alan Graham?
It certainly is. How are you, young man?
I'm doing great. I was listening to you on the air.
I was giving you so many compliments that the owner of the station came in and said, are you gay? I said, no, I'm not at all gay. Anyway, Gary, I was going to set up the little story here. You went on Coast to Coast. In fact, we were both going to go. You said to me one day, let's do Coast to Coast. And I said, okay. And you said, who else should we have on there? And I said, why don't you get the Doors? And you said, okay. And you got Krieger. And you tried to get Manzarek, but he was standoffish. Anyway, so I emails Manzarek and say, why don't you come on the show? So Mandrake says, oh, I'm coming on the show. And he comes on and he's a total dick to everybody, even before he gets in the door. And Gary's asking him serious questions, like the serious journalist that he is. And he brings up this point. Ray, what about this, you know, thing about Jim Morrison not being in the grave and all? He went off on Gary and said, oh, that's just such a disgust. I don't even want to dignify that with an answer. So Gary is flabbergasted because he's got this tape of Ray saying, all of the fans, all the Jim Morrison fans will be with me and we'll yell, open the box, open the box. What bullshit. So I said to Gary, well, let's go on and do, you know, we'll talk about that next time on Coast to Coast. But here we are again talking about it. So, Gary, tell us about what really happened here.
Well, it was kind of surprising, Alan. As you know, we'd set up a show. I mean, Coast to Coast has been wanting to do something with the Doors for a long time. And as you know, I talked to the executive producer, and we had it all set up. It was going to be me and you and then Robbie Krieger. And then it was a good idea to bring in Manzarek. And then for whatever reason, the Doors management called, and there was some issue about them going on with you and you with them. Yeah. And so I made Coast to Coast, well, I didn't make them, but Coast to Coast offered to do a better show, do two shows, one with you by yourself when your book comes out, and then, of course, they went with the one on the door. So it was changed, as you know, within the last few days before the show, and then when the show went on, you know, we just went on. And there were a number of questions, but when Ray said that that was disgusting, he wasn't even going to address the idea that no one would know unless the grave was open at Pere Lachaise. I know that three jaws dropped. I know mine dropped, George Norrie's, and also Tom Tantiver, because that's not what he's been saying for the last 7 years. And I guess Ray didn't realize that I was the consultant for a series called VH1 Confidential, and we did a segment on the Doors. I've been trying to get the video of it, but I remember seeing the video where Ray is sitting there, and he's saying, on July 8th, 2001, I'm going to be at Pere Lachaise with Doors fans around the world, and when they dig that coffin up, I'm going to be yelling, open the box, open the box. And I was thinking, oh my gosh, if you talk about disgusting, that's pretty disgusting there. So whatever made him change his mind the last 7 years, maybe it's a bit of revisionist history, but I guess we're going to have a show to look forward to ourselves, won't we?
Well, I can shed a little light on that. As a matter of fact, he was kissing major ass, trying to say, Jim and Pam were Romeo and Juliet of rock and roll, my ass. What a load of crap. More than that, I think he's trying to get, you know, the estate to let him have some poetry so he can do a new album. And so he was doing this overly, overly Pamela and Jim. Everybody knows the truth about him. Everyone close knows the truth about him. But I want to say this to my friend Gary Patterson. I was very angry when that happened because I knew better, because there was a filmmaker who came to me once and said, oh my God, Mandrake took us to Paris with this film crew, an Australian group. And there was this whole crowd was there, and he said, I'm going to plan to do something really dramatic. And he was like, oh, so everybody was waiting. The crowd was waiting. The whole thing was tense. Mandrake stands on Jim's grave, stands on his grave and yells to the crowd, hey, man. He says man like every other second. I don't know what's going on, man. This grave here is too small for Jim's body, so I don't know what's going on. I guess he hoped to incite the crowd, Gary, but they remained mute, and they just stared at him more in disgust than anything away. So he started doing this thing. Friends, Romans, and Doors fans, lend me your rectum. I mean, lend me your... And the crowd just melted away, and the camera crew was poised, ready to photograph this big event. It never happened. It was like, and that was one of Ray's many attempts to drag Morrison from the grave and say, like, oh, there's a guy writing to me from Trinidad or Barbados who says he's Jim Morrison. I don't know if he is or not. And it's like, what a bastard. You know, he's talking about Weekend at Bernie's. This is Weekend at Jimmy's. So I hope today, Gary Patterson, that we've rectified a little bit of the truth, because I know you to be of impeccable reputation and a rock historian as far as I'm concerned. So I know you wouldn't ever misstep or say something wrong, and if you did, you correct it. So I think he owes you an apology, but that will be a long time coming. But I've been going over a little bit of the other part of why I'm impressed by you. I want you to tell people how you put your book how you took it and found your niche, because a lot of aspiring writers out there want to get published, and they run up against the same thing, money and sharks and so on. So tell them your magnificent and motivational story.
Well, I think everyone has a book with them. And, Alan, I know that since I've known you, you've been working on yours, and I'm looking forward to reading it. I know it's about to come out within the next week or so. But for me, I always loved mysteries. I guess growing up on the Twilight Zone and rock and roll at the same time, I always had this niche of maybe putting it all together. And the first thing I wanted to do was I was always curious why a book hadn't been written on the Paul is Dead rumors from 1969. So I kept looking for material, couldn't find a book. So basically, I just sat down and decided to write it myself. And what I did, I guess if I'd done the research and found out that book proposals, 99 out of 100 are turned down by agents, it probably would have probably scared me a little bit. But I went on and did it. I did the book. And then I went to a friend of mine who was an attorney who approached a few publishers. And the question they asked or they sent back was, who's interested in the Beatles anymore? And this was around 1994, 95. So I believed in the book. I thought it was good enough. I thought it was definitely cool. And I thought that maybe it'd be great on radio. So I did it myself. And I published 2,000 copies. It's the black copy of The Walrus is Paul. Put it out and went on radio. And I found out I had a niche in radio, which was great because I sold every copy within a few months. And bookstores online. I was on ABC radio. I had national radio. I was on the BBC in London. And then I had to decide, do I want to be a publisher or a writer? So I gave up the publishing.
Excuse me, Gary. Tell them how you got on the radio. Tell them how you got yourself on the radio.
Well, actually, I hired a publicist. And she took me to all the local markets. And I did all the local radio shows. And then she had a call from ABC Radio in Dallas, which is a huge network. And for a couple hundred copies of the book, they promoted me for the whole weekend with interviews. And that time I was national. I was in London. I had sales going everywhere because I attacked the program of starting local, then regional, and then national, and then I hoped within a year I'd be international. But all this took place within 4 months. I was international. And then I found a small publisher so I could keep my eye on my book because I didn't want to give up, you know, the creative part I put in. And after I did it, they put out another 10,000 copies. They sold those. And then I found an agent who took me to Simon & Schuster. And then the rest, you know, they bought the book, and I've been with Simon & Schuster ever since. So, you know, if you've got a book and you'd like to do something with it and you believe, then, you know, you can make it happen. And there's a number of ways in which I've, you know, we've talked that you can make it happen more. But you know, I honestly believe that anyone can do it.
Well, Gary, I'm going to do this for our listeners. Very soon, I'm going to be putting a page up on my website where people can go and you can communicate with them and they can you can consult with them on the air a little bit. I mean, on the website, and they can ask questions. How about that?
Sure, be glad to. That'd be great.
So, my friend Gary Patterson, I am honored to have you, sir. You're a great inspiration to me, and I would like to say that in my eyes, you've been exonerated if you ever needed to be, and your friend Mr. Manzarek. As he's qualified for a new award we're going to give out this week after I say goodbye to you. But do you have anything last thing to say?
Attention presents Apple of the Week.
Do you get that?
Oh, I've got it. And, Alan, I appreciate everything you do, and I'm looking forward to your book. And I think Ray and Robbie are probably still in South America. What do you think?
All right, my friends. All right, go to Gary Patterson's website. You go on my website, and you'll see his little page. Go there, read all about it. He's a great man and a great writer. Thank you very much for being with us. You've honored our show, young man. Okay, now we're going to do a little bit of my book because we didn't get to it last week. And there are lots of little stories that haven't gone in the book. And it's almost every day something else new happens. For example, I drove up this morning when it was, you know, early in the morning, before it's light, and I drove up to Los Angeles, and I drove down to Leo Carrillo State Beach where my grandchildren and my daughter, and I met my big son down there, and we had a good, lovely, fun time. And it's so hard to peel grandkids off you when you want to leave, and they're hugging you, and it's like, it's, you know, it's wonderful, but it's really kind of, I wish I could be with them all the time, but I'm not. So as I'm leaving, My ex-wife Anna pulls up, and man, she carries a wealth of PPK and a 9mm. She is mean as a snake. So she sees me, and I say, oh, damn, I started to take off, right? So she blocks me in with a black, she's got a black Mercedes with tinted windows and, I mean, a souped-up engine. So I couldn't get away, so she blocked me in. So I took a dive, went through a bramble bush, and, like, she's smart. She didn't follow me. She ran around the bush, and just as she came around, there were two guard, you know, national, what do you call those, park guards coming along the route, so she had to stash the nine. So I split, and it's like, God. So I ran away, you know, and I got away, I should say, because she could put, like, air conditioning in your melon from 50 feet without a problem. So I my friend Jason, he's a comedian, and he was supposed to be there too. I was going to visit him, but his daughter got sick and he had to go home. So I got out of there, and my son Sefton was, last time I looked, he was holding his mother down, like, you know, don't mom. So I got away. So I got to Jason's house, and he asked me to come over because he wanted me to do some go over some stand-up routine with him, you know, like he has a comedy show, and you'll see him on my site if you go over there. Anyway, so his wife there, she's like a little tiny thing, and she's like, there's more meat on a butcher's pencil, and she's looking at me like weird, you know, it's like, I don't even know the woman, and she's looking at me, looked like she'd been nipping the moonshine or something, you know, but she had that intense look in her face, and so I was telling a joke, and back and forth, and then out of nowhere, I mean, out of nowhere, she dives across the table and headbutts me. I mean, a little tiny woman like that knocks me down, stuns me. And so her husband gets in the middle of her and tries to calm her down. But she's kicking and screaming, biting and everything. So we both jump on her, and we managed to get her down, you know, like we pinned her with a stool. Then we roped her like a goat, you know, goat roped her. And then we got a knock, knock, knock at the door. And there's a Catholic priest who's coming to discuss something about the christening this afternoon or something. He sees the whole fight. He says, what's going on here? There are terrible things going on. And she's screaming and biting and everything. And he runs in there and tries to help. And she kicks him right in the nuts. His collar flies off and he's gone. And he's, whoa, my God. We're trying to save the priest. And we're trying to get away from her. And she's biting and kicking and scratching. So the priest, we give him a glass of water. He says, and what's the name? What went on here? And she said, you tell him. Go on, Father. Tell him what they said. We were telling dirty jokes, Father. And he said, well, dirty jokes. No, that's not so very good. We said, well, it wasn't that bad. She didn't have to fly off the handle. Go on, tell him what it was. Tell him. So I told him a dirty joke. And he said, that's immoral. It's very immoral to say anything like that. And I said, no. What's immoral is priests diddling altar boys. Anyway, so he's trying to get over, you know, the pain. And I'm saying, I got to get out of here, man. These people are crazy. So Jason was trying to say he was sorry to me. But then I saw her going for a dagger. So I left, man. So that was... That's one of the stories that's going to appear in my book next week. Right now, we're going to take a little break, and here's a little bit of Polish music.
Kelly?
Aluki?
Maja? Maja?
Just had a call from Jason. His wife's been arrested, and she beat up three policemen who came over there. So this just gets more and more weird every day. That little song there was something that I've been doing to my children before they go to bed, all of them, for 40 years. And I do it to my grandkids right now, and it's this whole thing about every time I sing that little song, they fall right to sleep, and sometimes I do. So what you should put in your kids' heads and your grandkids' heads is good stuff. Not the crap that we're all subject to do. Anyway, now this is our new artist segment. We're going to feature a new artist every week and play a little bit of their song so we don't run too long. But this one is from Frankie Setback, and it's called Carousel. Now this is for all the shitbags and all the grifters and all the liars and all the people who take your money. And it's called Carousel.
the top you find all those souls you've left behind.
Okay, well, we got a bit of a problem there. Let's try that again. All right, we're not going to play that this one this time, but it's a song called Carousel. We'll play it when we get it fixed because it seems to be... Okay, that was the end of Tinsel Rain. You know what? Just let Carousel come in wherever it comes in.
Since she's been gone.
This is Tinsel Rain. This is another song by Frankie Setback. So, okay, we're going to scrap this segment until we get it queued up properly. Okay, each week there'll be a new artist, and we'll try to get it a little better next time for you. Okay, well, just play whatever you got there.
If you wake up,
this is called Tinsel Rain,
in a cold gray dawn, and the birds don't sing, there's a coming storm. If you lift your head, and it's full of pain, you've been caught in a tinsel rain. Tinsel rain is falling down. Sometimes it's cold like her hands.
All right, that was Tinsel Rain, and we're going to try to come up with the other half of it. But in the meantime, let's get back to Grip It for a minute, because this is, it's beyond belief. Every single day, something loony comes on, and wherever there's a grifter or a scammer, or wherever you'll find, you got it queued up? Okay, we're gonna try it again, and whatever it comes in, we're gonna do it. All right, go ahead. There you go. So this is the second verse.
And the walls come slowly crumbling in. It's no use squirming. This time you're learning that what you've given, you're gonna get right back. Every time you step on another friend, as you climb your golden stair, at the top you find all those souls you've left behind. Now the ones you're gonna meet on your way back down. There you are again, same old scene again. Some other fool playing on you. Round and round again, the same old story goes again. And you can never leave your carousel. There you go again, on your own again. Somebody else done found you out. Don't go whining or pretend you're pining, 'cause nobody cares anymore. Every time you talk, you dig a deep grave, and the walls come slowly crumbling in. It's no use squirming, this time you're learning that what you've given to people, you're gonna get right back. Sometimes twice. Every time you step on another friend, as you climb the golden stair, at the top you find all those souls you've left behind. All the ones you're gonna meet on your way back down.
That was Frankie Setback's new single, Carousel, and it's dedicated to all the shitbags, all the liars, all the conmen, all the posers. And it's actually about all of us, because at some point in our lives, you know, we end up like, you know, nobody's listening to our bullshit. And so that's the result of being a bullshitter. Okay, look, call this number, 818-602-4498, and I want you to go to my website, it's darkriders.com with a Y, darkriders.com. And when you're on that site, go look at all of the music, go look at all of the poetry, go look at Ghost Radio, look at all the beautiful things that my friends and I, Scott Graves, and Jesse Shakespeare have put together over the last year. We've done some most beautiful things. Jesse has got this wonderful CD music. Oh, it's a piece of art. It's called Musi Art, and it's all of his beautiful art and all of it's about an hour and a half long, and it's one of the Ghost Radio shows we did for the soundtrack. And Jesse's art is stunning. In fact, it's so powerful that I consider it medication, honest to God. I let my wife watch it last night, and she watched it three times, and I woke up in the middle of the night, and she was sitting up fast asleep with that same DVD playing. It's totally hypnotic, and in the Jewish faith, if you go to pray, you know, you get there, and you see the people in the temple, and they're praying, and you don't know who's who, and it's like you don't know what's going on within each person's soul, but no matter what happens, if you can go there and pretend you prayed, you can pretend you felt something, but the truth is, if you come away refreshed, like feeling good, then you know you really prayed. Or if you don't, then you were just posing, or you really didn't have your heart in it. So when I listen to Jesse Shakespeare's the music art that we did together, Scott's work and Jesse's work and my work, I am absolutely transported to another place, and I am not bullshitting. I'm telling you, this is medicine. And while we're on the subject of medicine, I know all these terminally ill people who are taking all kinds of crappy drugs, you know, that's really side effect for this one, a side effect for that one. And I found, for someone like me who's arthritic, that the best medicine, the most organic medicine I can find on the market, it's medicinal compounds as far as I'm concerned. And it's cannabis. And you can have it in a brownie. There's a paste you rub on. You can rub it on your feet. It's a bomb. Believe me, it really helps. If you've got glaucoma or you're a cancer patient and you can't eat, try medicinal marijuana. It is wonderful. Okay. Now, if you want a copy of my book, I want you to go to, first of all, go to my website, lizardkinglounge.com, and take a look. I'll go on the forums and see all the breaking news and see all the stuff about all of these phonies and grifters and shitbags who are dragging Jim Morrison's carcass around like Weekend at Bernie's. And in fact, some engineer said to me the other day, he had an idea that I should do a product, Jim Morrison product. Is Louie there? Hey, Lou.
Yeah.
What were you saying about that idea I should do?
Yeah, I was saying that you should have a line of your own bath products since you've been accused of, you know...
killing everybody.
Offing people in the tub.
Yeah.
So these were the Alan Graham soap on a rope, Lizard King.
Soap.
what were some of the other products I was telling
bath
you?
Bath beads.
Alan Graham bath beads so you can soak like a rock star. And
why would it be Alan Graham? Oh, I see, because I'm the killer.
Well, yeah,
before.
since you offed, you know, Althea Flint and Domino Harvey and all of these people died in a bathtub.
And the whole cast of Bullet, I did them in, remember that one?
Yeah, Steve
and
McQueen.
My Fair Lady, I dug some of them up and killed them again.
Everyone from the Muppet movie.
Hey.
Who else?
So it should be Alan Graham what?
Oh, it's a whole line of Alan Graham bath products.
Yeah. So
you soak like a rock star. Best bath you'll ever take. Of course, it'll be the last one. But
okay, my show's called House of Detention for a reason. One of Jim's songs, Cancel My Subscription to the House of Detention, right? I want to tell you where that song came from. Morrison wrote that song about Pamela because when Pamela was a kid, she was in a juvenile gang similar to me. We had the Kingsley Road Mob when I was a kid. I was the wheelman for the gang, right? Well, Pamela was a part of what shall I say? Like there was a Fagin-esque guy who had all these school kids who ran away from home, and he had them breaking into houses and stuff. And anyway, he got busted, and Pamela got put in a detention center. So she was telling Jim about this, and so here it comes. Cancel my subscription to the House of Detention. I got some friends inside. You see how innocuous and simple Morrison's lyrics came? I told you the one where he was sitting out front of Robbie Krieger's house, and everybody was partying, and there was a wall of hyacinths, blue flowers, you know, sitting on the fence. So he saw that and he wrote, what are they doing in the hyacinth house? And all Robbie's friends were inside the house. Jim was sitting outside drunk, I imagine. And so that's the simplest things. You think they're all complicated and it's all, you know, like it means something. Some of the most innocuous things are, you know, the most interesting. So let's, once again, 818-602-4490. We're coming down to our last segment now. And I'd like to get back to the grift in the night away because it's a gorgeous segment. So if we could have our grip it just inspires me to go on and talk about the kind of people who get lost in this belief that, like, for example, that this kid is a son of Jim Morrison. I am Jim Morrison. I am a cowboy. Anyway, so that was a weird call, wasn't it?
Yeah.
So anyway, it's a type of person who will believe in anything. I mean, anything at all. But as the psychiatrist tells me that this is the way we come from the factory. We're wired to believe. We're wired not to believe. We are cynical. We are sad. We are happy. But we're already dispensed in the womb by the genes. So, for example, we only discovered, I think I said this, that we only discovered that there was a defective gene for depression about 15 years ago when the University of Pennsylvania did a study. They had four Amish families, four generations of an Amish family, and they provide what we call a perfect biological study because they never move away from each other, so you can trace their genes, and they isolated a defective gene. And I think they've isolated one for alcoholism. So everything is in your DNA. Everything is in your genes. Who you are, your formative years on top of that, you know, whatever those years are, you're made in the shade, and very little can be done after that. So these people who are, I call them victims, they'll just you know, they'd rather believe the fantasy. Like, take this guy up in Oregon. If you say to him, hey, look at Ray Manzarek, he's mocking that guy up in Oregon. He's mocking it. Did you see that Jim Morrison lives in Oregon? So Ray Manzarek says, oh, yeah, sure. Oh, Jim Morrison, Oregon. Well, to a person who is delusional, he will take it literally and say, oh, my God, Ray Manzarek just said that. I better put that up on my website. And so he'll believe anything that you say, as long as it's, you know, fits his lexicon. He imports it down and downloads it to his reality. And it is a very separate reality from all of us. Okay, we're going to take a short break right now.
Ladies and gentlemen, from Los Angeles, California, The Doors!
So touch back on the delusional people again for a minute, because it's important to me anyway. Let's take this Cliff kid, for instance. His mother's pounded his brain for 15 years. Now he really believes that he's Jim Morrison. If we call his telephone, he's got some poetry of Jim. You know what? Just listen to it. Just listen to it. It's just unbelievable. It goes something like this. Do you know the warm progress under the stars? And it's and Cliff answers, yes, father. And it's like, oh my God. It's very, 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 very sad. And I don't want to spend too much time on it, but we had a little clip there, but oh, here we go.
You reached an indelible pager.
Oh, I think he must have changed the number by now. Okay, anyway, we had a good laugh with it last week, but anyway. It's done. The sad part is this. You've got a very sick woman dragging a mentally ill child around the country telling him that he's Jim Morrison. And each day he slips deeper and deeper into it. Like my son Sefton says, why do you even talk about him, Dad? You see, I guess I'm one of those caretaker who gives a crap that... I remember this kid when he was not complicated and not messed up like he is now. He showed up at Densmore's book signing a couple of months ago. My God, he had a fat belly. He had this ID that says, I just got out of prison and look at me. And he was hawking his CD in line while he was waiting. So when he got up to the table, I guess they must have just, oh my God, because he was sweaty and weird. And then this guy said he met him outside and he came out and said, hey, I'm Jim Morrison's son. And he gave him this hideous CD and then he just stumbled off into the night like some hobo. It was like really, really pathetic. I mean, really very sad. Oh, coming into our last, you know, 5 minutes of the program. And we want to call 818-602-4498 and you could win a book. Actually, if you answer a question right, you can, I'll give you a free copy of the book, okay? I'll tell you a little story real quick about Admiral Morrison, who was a superb athlete, by the way. If you look in I'm trying to think of the name of it. Anyway, he was an expert on the rings, a very difficult thing to do, and he could, there are lots of pictures of him in his Navy, what's the book that you get when you, I can't even think of the name of it. Anyway, it's his graduation, like the equivalent of a graduation book, what do they call it? Anyway, each year they put one out, and he was in it, and he was honored in it. But I just want to tell you a little story. One day in Coronado, we had a big house, and we had, you know, ours was a neighborhood. People came over, and we had this parallel bars that we got thrown away, and it was an old thing, and we put it out in the backyard, and everybody would come and swing on it and jump on it and do handstands and whatever. You know, it was a great little thing. The kids loved it. One day, Admiral Morrison comes walking in, and he sees everybody. Without even blinking, he goes over, grabs the end of the bars, and does a kip. And you know what a kip is. That's really a difficult thing to do. Now, this is an older man. He's retired from the military. He's still in perfect shape. In fact, he can wear his same uniform that he graduated from the academy today. He never gained a pound or an ounce. He really was in trim shape. Anyway, he did this beautiful kip, and then he did a dismount and landed perfectly, like just like an athlete. Just for a second, he paused. It was like, my God, that was poetry in motion. But that was the Morrison family, all athletes, all brilliant. Whenever I'd meet Anna on the street in Liverpool, she'd run up to me and do a forward flip and land right in front of me on the concrete. All great swimmers, all great people. And those are some of the stories you're going to read in my book. All right, we're down to our last couple of minutes, and I just want to say once again a shout-out to all the people I love, my relatives in Liverpool. I'm going to talk all right through my teeth like that scouse for a minute. All right, but you won't understand me, so. My brother, my little brother Frankie, he and I used to have our own language together, and I transferred that to my sons, and as we... You know, my Liverpoolese never dies because my sons call me up all the time. All right, Dad, how's it going? And they talk in the lingo with me, so I never lose it, you know. So anyway, the book, you got to go to my www.darkriders.com. That's a publishing company. The book is there. You can buy it online. And if you want a lovely signed copy and you want me to say something in it, write that in with your request and I'll say, you know, whatever your name is, I'll say something lovely about you. And if you put your mother-in-law's name on, if you don't like it, I'll douche her for you. Well, yeah, I don't mean that literally, but you know, I'll yell at her. Okay, I've got a new announcement, and that is, if you'd like somebody insulted, please call me at my home, and I will do it. $10 for an insult. I don't care who it is. I will give you the best insult you've ever had, and hopefully you'll feel a little better vicariously through it. So, all right, we're coming to the end. It's been wonderful. Thank you very much, and Azar out.